You are now listening to A Tale from a World Asunder.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Simon. I will be your GM, and I am playing with the lovely Nick.
Hello.
And Louisa.
Hi.
In our last episode, our heroes pursued the beast known as the Karlog beyond the ridge outside of the settlement of Alpujarra. After the impact of a tremendous fireball, they discovered that it was in fact an illusion, concealing the body of their true quarry, the Lieutenant Second Class, Omar Isidor de Montoya y Oshala. Beating a hasty yet stealthy retreat back to Freedom's Wings, our heroes were accosted by their erstwhile hostess, Anna Morena, informing them that an enormous bounty had been placed on their heads. A brief, yet no less dramatic, shootout ensued, after which Captain Adelaide steered his vessel toward the direction of the rising sun, hoping to land somewhere much safer. As the previous night's violence and shock begins to sort of not depart but slacken, where do we find ourselves?
Adelaide has helped Mila and Omar get comfortable after setting his bearing. Gone down, made sure that Smother knows his job is to make sure Omar is comfortable and make sure he's not going to die or bleed out. Once that's set, once the kobolds have their duties, Adelaide will, seeing Mila get another bed out for her, and put it nearby to Omar's so that she can have her constant vigil if she wants it. And will, after giving them a couple of hours to just sit, and for himself to just sit, he sits in his office, he has a little nip of brandy or scotch or some other hard liquor that he has on hand. Just a drop, just enough to keep him going and to subside the pain a little bit. He will go down to Mila, put a hand on her shoulder, and go, "I know there's a lot going on right now. I know you don't want to leave his side, but I think we need to have a talk."
The captain finds Mila in the hold, looking at the empty bed next to Omar's. Back against the wall, sat down, hugging her own knees. Gaze empty. She looks up at him and nods and puts her hand out for him to help her get up.
As you move to stand up, the kobold who has been wrapping Omar's wounds looks over and says,
"Mistakes over bandaging. Have to go get more."
I'll do that. Just go run and get your bandages, and I'll continue to slowly, carefully bandage Omar.
Smother will nod and bow himself out.
"I guess we're talking here then."
As you move to bandage up Omar, Mila trails behind you. Slow steps. Stands by the beam onto which Omar's bed has been tied up and hooked, holding the wood with both hands as she looks at you wide-eyed.
Adelaide, since you've taken the job of
tending to the lieutenant's wounds in this moment. Give me a medicine check.
It's not as bad as it could be. It's a 12.
Not as high as it needs to be, but high enough that nothing goes wrong.
Adelaide's going very, very slowly.
As you start to cover more and more of the many lacerations on Omar's body, you apply this thin but acrid disinfectant mixture that the kobolds have mixed together, taking a sponge, dipping it into this cold, biting liquid. As you sort of apply it, you can see that it stings and seizes. And as the bandages come down, you know that this can't feel good, but it will help more than it hurts. And right now, that's what's important.
Mela, you know what's going on here.
I have a clue.
Which is?
Mela looks from you to Omar. Open torso, rags still around him, now covered in bandages. He looks so different. He was always strong, but he wasn't this strong before, and she puts her hand on one of his shoulders and goes to move the rags of his burned uniform to try and see what else has changed.
I mean, the first thing that stands out are injuries. Lacerations that could be from thorns or could be from scratching or could be from any number of things. But as you look closer, you see that there are lines that you can see on his body, and as you look even closer, you see that they're not random scars. They're markings. And you see that in addition to injury, Omar's body is now covered in tattoos of a certain kind. If you would like more information, you are going to need to roll for it.
Mela once she sees the tattoos, it gives her something to focus in on. She gets on her knees and starts moving the fabric just with the tips of her fingers and running her fingers along the lines. She would like to make an arcana check to try and find any properties of these markings.
Adelaide will help by cutting away the fabric and going, it's better if we just get rid of it, otherwise it's gonna leave traces within the wounds. I'm gonna need to get rid of this shirt anyway, so. And he would like to look at the markings and try to recall in his own head what people he might have met that might have had the same kind of markings or symbolism on them, talismans, anything like that, across his travels, and what he would associate with that style of marking. And he'd like to do a history
Nice.
That's an 18 arcana from Mila.
It's a 3 history. Rattle it.
We're going to tackle the history first. And the reason Adelaide has such trouble recognizing markings like these is that he's never seen anything like them before. These don't look elven in any recognizable style. They don't look like any sailor's tattoos that Adelaide would be familiar with. They don't even look like the odd fungal markings that dwarves leave on their bodies. These look alien in style and unknowable in purpose. As Adelaide goes through his Rolodex of the peoples he's encountered on his travels, turning to Arcana. On an 18, these markings are clearly magical in nature, and you recognize that because as you look closer at them, you start to recognize symbols. Symbols from the lingua arcana. And some of them are very simple, others are very complex. The tattoos run from the base of the neck down both the chest and back, down to about the navel. And on both sides, they're made up of circles in which are inscribed these glyphs, connected to one another by very straight lines of It doesn't even look like ink. It looks like scars that have been packed with ash, with a kind of red-colored ash. And you see that the glyphs, you don't recognize more than you do, but if you had to guess at their purpose, they look like glyphs associated with nothing so much as amplification. In other words, the magical principle of taking something and making it stronger.
And these are they confined to his torso? Is there anything going down his arms?
They cover his shoulders, and so a little bit onto his biceps, but no more than about halfway down, like a mantle.
After taking all of this in, Adelaide will once again look at Mila and go, "Does this mean anything to you?"
Mila is frowning, furrowed eyebrows. "These are glyphs, they're lingua arcana. I don't recognize all of them. They don't look like an effect in its own right." She's gonna try and investigate for anything like a bite mark.
Roll investigation.
That's a nat 20.
Nat 20.
Yeah. Nat 20 for a total of 27.
Goddamn. On a nat 20, you very distinctly find nothing. You discover no bite mark. I mean, there's plenty of wounds. There's plenty of places where blood might be exchanged, which, of all the things that could make a person change the way you saw Omar's body changed, that would be the operative effect. But as you look, you don't see anything that's clearly... You don't see anything that seems deliberate. On that 27, you begin to suspect that most of these wounds are self-inflicted. The thing that has been done to the lieutenant is the tattoo. The wounds you start to realize are something the lieutenant did to himself trying to get it off.
Mila relays this to the captain. I'd expected it to be something more recognizable, some kind of curse, transmutation, lycanthropy. I don't know what they did to him.
When you get far enough out past the charted border, things stop making sense in the same way that they do back on the proper side. I don't know much about magic. I'm not particularly educated in the same way that you might be. I know my fair share of folk magic, which the problem with folk magic is that everybody's different. It's like handwriting in a way. It doesn't matter if you know the incantation. You go two miles down the road, you can see the same exact effect, and it is completely different.
As you say that, Adelaide, you both look at this magical lattice that has been constructed on Omar. And if you're looking for a handwriting style, I'll give you this, Louisa, still writing that 27 investigation. We'll say it makes up for the gaps in Adelaide's history. And of course, Adelaide wouldn't know anything like this as he discusses knowing folk magic, because you realize this looks, if anything, ultra textbook. There's nothing that looks folksy or organic here. Everything about this reads standard, but more. Mages tend to incorporate some degree of idiosyncrasy in the way that they conjure spells. But this looks, if anything, stenciled. No flourishes, no code. It just seems like it's using much more complicated magic. But not in a way that would signify any kind of personalization on the part of the person who made it.
Mila, what do you want to do now?
We need to get him to a hospital.
We're getting him to a hospital. We're going to take a slightly roundabout way to do it. I need to make one stop first. But we're getting him to a hospital. Other than that, what do you want to do? Do you want to find out what's going on here? Do you want to find the person that did this? Do you want to go home? What's your course of action?
This is not the first time the captain has asked Mila about her game plan. He sees her brows get deep into a furrow. She looks like she's mad, but also lost. She looks at his hands, taking away pieces of Omar's shirts, at her own hands, on the markings that are on Omar's bodies. Now she looks at Omar's face. the gash left where one of his eyes used to be. Captain, I don't know. We need to get him to a hospital. He needs... Once he's in talking condition, then Elsie, I need to know what happened to him. He sent me these letters before. I still have them. They're in my bag somewhere. He said there was something odd going on at the border. I want to go home, but I don't know if it's safe.
As Mila says that, and as her voice breaks just slightly, she feels the gentlest just grab and hold on her arm. As you see that straining himself to move to the side, eyes still firmly shut, the lieutenant has managed to move his arm close enough to grab Mila's.
Mila still has her hand, one of her hands on Omar's chest, the one where he's holding on to the honestly flimsy fabric of the white blouse that she wore to go see him at the skyport the night he was meant to return from leave. And she moves her other hand to his face when she feels him move and looks at him and calls. Omar?
In this moment, I need somebody to make an additional medicine check.
It is absolutely not Mila. Did you roll an at one?
No, but it's still not great. Can I have help from Smother, who makes a timely comeback?
I will say, the kobold has at this point returned. Take the help action.
It is much better. That's an 18. It was a 5 and then a 14.
On an 18, you see that Smother comes in with fresh bandages and a bucket of water, a little bit of which, Adelaide, you take and just, like, kind of wash off Omar's face. And as you do, just kind of a... as... Lieutenant Second Class Omar de Montoya Yoshala opens his one remaining deep hazel eye, looking first at Adelaide, taking a second to fully take him in, moving briefly to the kobold. Clearly taking a second to size up his rescuers.
Mila's hand on his cheek moves his face to look at her.
I'm sorry I couldn't make it, darling.
Mila starts crying. Her head drops onto his chest. Maybe a little too strong.
Ellie goes, "Whoa, careful, careful."
Unable to fully move his arm in the way that he would like to sort of cover Mila in this moment, I think Omar turns as much as he can and says,
I take it you're to thank for the escape?
directed at Adelaide.
I am just the getaway ship. That's all.
Mila picks up her head, drying off tears, and says he's being modest. This is Captain Adelaide. She looks at Adelaide because it's easier. He wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you.
I'd shake your hand, but...
It's a rat, soldier. What you need to do is you need to rest. This is a touching, heartfelt reunion, and I'm all for it. I'm glad that you're alive, but you need sleep.
First, if you will, he gestures with as much of his unoccupied arm as he can to his face. Razor.
Adelaide genuinely laughs at this and goes, soldier, you're gonna need a lot more than a razor to get back to what you were. We'll get you shaved, but it can't happen today. We got too many injuries.
Mila cuts in. She says, no, I'll do it.
It's not a question of being able to do it. It's a question of...
Captain, I said I will do it.
Can I make a medicine check to see if doing anything like that would be actually injurious to his health?
Absolutely.
It's a bastard 20.
You definitely know it's not the empirically right move, but you also see an intensely proud man attempting to salvage any part of the situation he has found himself in. And you think it might do more damage to deny it than to grant it.
Just be very careful about soap and wounds. Hear me?
Mila nods.
Do you know how to use a straight razor?
She nods again. She says, I've done this before.
Right. And he pulls out his Bowie knife. This is much the same. And he hands it to her.
Incredible.
You have by this point also bandaged the only wound that finds itself on Omar's face, with a very prominent bandage now covering basically the upper right side of his face. And as Omar sort of falls back into something approximating sleep, Mila, what happens next?
Mila waits until the captain is done bandaging Omar's wounds. While he does so, she lulls him back into sleep. She runs her hand through his hair, letting her fingers untangle whatever is left of the days, weeks, she doesn't know how long, of matting. She comes close to his face and lays kisses on his forehead and on his cheek and whispers to him, my heart, my love, until he falls asleep and waits for Smother to bring her water and soap with which she can shave him, does so as he sleeps, ever so delicately.
Adelaide will actually go and grab the soap and water and the shaving supplies. He brings a nice sort of lathering foam and some warm water, and then he leaves them be. He tells Smother to sort of stay near and keep an eye, but he goes upstairs and starts tending to his own wounds.
As he's leaving, Mila gets to her feet, her face. Mila's skin is pink to an extent. Much pinker now. The pink of her temples has spread to her cheeks. The tip of her nose is bright, bright shock pink. And she holds the captain by the arm before he leaves and looks him in the eye and says to him, "Thank you."
Yeah. As Mila and Omar share their moments downstairs, Adelaide bandages himself up a bit more carelessly, not really taking the time and energy to save himself. He knows he's going to be fine, and just wraps it so it doesn't get infected. He will sit down at his desk and take Razzie off of his shoulders, where Razzie's been sitting this whole time. Look at him and go, "What have I gotten us into?" They're good kids, but I can't afford this. Promised you adventure. And safety. And I'm not delivering on that. I've been unfair to you. I haven't asked you your opinion on any of this. I mean, apart from taking her aboard, of course, but I'm sorry. We should be partners.
Razzie sort of steps up onto your lap, kind of sniffs a little at the burn on the side of your leg that is now bandaged and salved, curls up into a little ball, and falls into a contented sleep that you know means you're more than forgiven.
Adelaide will sigh. "All right, I think it's time for bed." And Adelaide will gently pick Razzie up and crawl into his hammock, not like taking off the shoes, and that's it. And just passes out with Razzie on his chest.
As you awaken, it is, I will say, late afternoon. One of those days where the night was rough enough that you sleep through the whole duration of the sun being up. Mila, you, I think, instinctively go to check in on Omar, whose breathing has now settled into something much more natural, much more genuinely asleep. You see that Smother is sort of there, tending to what needs to be tended to. Just sort of looks at you and indicates,
"We got it, miss."
Thanks, Smother. I got it from here.
Yeah, huh?
You see, kind of wanders off. Actually wanders towards the door to Adelaide's office.
"Yeah, come in."
"Dinner soon, Captain?"
I'll do it. Just give me a moment.
"Sure, Captain?"
"I'm sure."
"I'll call the boys."
"Yeah, why don't you make sure you do your last checks and all that, but
Uh-huh.
I think we're probably smooth sailing for a while, so I can take over. Me and Razzie will deal with it. You boys get some rest.
Real smooth, Kevin.
Real smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Adelaide will crawl out of bed and make his way to the engine room, where Snap has left things in a state of not disrepair, because it's perfectly working and in perfect nick, but in a state of clutter and mess and personalized organization that looks to any outside eye as a rat's nest. But to Adelaide and Snarl and the two other kobolds, to a lesser degree, makes perfect sense. Everything's where it should be, including the pots and pans that are strung up like wind chimes in some random darkened corner that, if you didn't know where to look, you wouldn't find them. Adelaide takes the least greasy of them, gives it a good scrub with a bit of water and a steel brush, and will start to fry up dinner. He fries up polenta and eat rich beans in gravy and blackened corn that he sears to the point where it's almost a little bit chewy. It has a bit of texture to it. He mixes all of it with paprika and spices and herbs, and it is not a meal of kings, not a meal of champions, just a meal that fills your belly and keeps you taking that one step further. Adelaide will, with the polenta and beans and corn, he will add a little bit of water and mash it up a little bit so it's easier to get down. Bring a bowl for the lieutenant and bring a plate of unwatered food for Mila, as well as a very small flask for them to share of some mysterious smoky liquid. And then he'll go back up and give himself a bit of food, and then take the rest of the pot and just give the whole thing to the kobolds.
Mm. You see that the kobolds in their little quarters, you see they're all sat, not in chairs, but like cross-legged on the floor at their table with bowls and forks and spoons just sort of ready. One of them looks to you and goes,
"Meal with the crew, Captain?"
"Yeah, sure."
Another one takes the pot, places it on the table and goes,
"Bon appetit, boys."
"Where did you learn that?"
And with that, we pan away from a meal shared between the regular residents of Freedom's Wings. The smell of food alone is enough to wake Omar from his somewhat fitful sleep.
When he comes to, Mila has used the time in which she was waiting and tending, finishing cleaning off anything that was still dirty on him, to once again ritual cast Find Familiar and summon Pinky.
as the smoke-like curls of your magic condense into the form of our favorite purple pseudo-dragon, he comes to again, sort of shakes off his past circumstance. So, I see. We were successful despite my demise.
Sorry about that. Twice in one day.
The benefits of being a magical being. He sort of undulates down towards the lieutenant. I wish we could say that our friend here was as lucky. As Omar kind of comes to, take stock of yet another being. Hello there, my friend. Turns to you, Mila, and goes, is he summoned?
Yeah, I was feeling lonely.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh.
Easy, yeah.
I shouldn't laugh.
But I'm so funny, though.
I'm sorry. I smell food.
Yeah, here, let me... And she moves to sit Omar up a little bit, just so his shoulders are against the wooden beam and he can swallow the spoonfuls that she feeds him of the meal the captain has brought him. She takes the flask that the captain brought and shakes it and says, he also brought this. If you're feeling a lot of pain, we could consider it.
He just nods. And I think Pinky looks over to you and says, well, give the man the flask.
Mila doesn't actually hand it over to Omar, but she helps him to some sips of it.
I think stomach much more full. You see a little bit of life come back to Omar's face. And he kind of even shifts himself sort of under his own power, wincing a little as he does so, but definitely capable. I expect we must have made quite a quick getaway.
Yeah, I don't know where we're going, actually. I should find that out. Well, the captain has some business to tend to. Quick deviation from the route, and then we're getting you to a hospital.
And you see, as you've started to mention, like, plans, you start to see gears begin to turn again. If the captain has a more discreet location where I might be tended to, that might prove more advisable.
Right.
They said I deserted, didn't they?
Mila nods.
I thought it was mostly disease and genuine desertion, but if we travel faster than the news... You see that his mind is, like, racing. He's trying to take in what he knows and extrapolate to what might be going on in the future. But he can't quite... He's a little too loopy still for it to fully make sense.
Mila places her hand on his shoulder and says, just... I'll worry about what comes next. That's my job. News travel as fast as they will. I'm hoping once you've gathered a little strength that there are some people we can be in touch with. But we got out pretty quickly. there was a reward put out for the captain and I's heads out in the territory, and you, of course, are... But that's only good in the territory as far as we know, right?
That should hold.
One step at a time for now.
I'll need a word with the captain.
Maybe after you've had some more sleep.
And you see he is attempting to stand up.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It can't wait.
Middle looks at Pinky and says, would you fetch him when he's done with dinner?
Of course, ma'am.
And sort of snakes off into the hallway.
She looks at Bomar and says, his name is Pinky Rodin. Well, actually, it's Rodin Pinky, but we keep calling him Pinky Rodin. I know it's the word pink twice, but it just kind of happened.
There are worse names. Nice.
He's definitely a piece of your magic.
Mila smiles as she takes that in. Pinky is definitely a piece of her magic. But with Omar sitting in front of her, his body covered in magic that she can't track down, the warmth in her chest very quickly turns sour.
He, I think, picks up on that, turns a little towards you and says,
I don't think I'm quite ready to face the mirror yet, but I'm sure I must be quite a sight.
And you see he forces a little wan smile.
She runs her hand through his hair one more time, which she's cut a little more up to what it normally is, so it isn't down to his shoulders anymore, just instead about his ears. And she slicked it back with water from when she was tending to his appearance. And then holds his jaw and says, you're perfect.
I certainly don't feel perfect.
These... And he sort of gestures to his chest.
Do they hurt?
It's not pain. It's... It was like a fog. I can remember we were on patrol, and then it was like being hit on the back of the head with something very solid, but without the sharp pain that would accompany it, just the delirium. And then it was fog and rage.
And you see he starts to kind of shake as the memory of it clearly distresses him.
And I knew that they were a threat to me. A shot rang out.
And you remember
how they shot him.
He kind of laughs a little bit.
I think I must have already appeared quite monstrous. I think Ale shot me.
And he sort of feels at the bandage and kind of falls a little bit in his seat.
And then it's fog.
Mila takes his hand and takes it off his face, holds it between the two of hers instead. She runs her thumb on his hand a few times, looks down at it, then looks at him. I thought the whole time we were going after some creature or monster who had taken you. We were hoping to find you alive and that it hadn't killed you yet, but you didn't hurt me, Omar. You saved us from someone else who sought to do us harm. I should have known. The captain found out it was you, but I should have known.
You see, he really looks to be at a loss for words. He looks up at you and just goes, I will need that word with the captain.
He'll be here soon. And she takes to finish feeding him and eating her own meal as well in the pauses in between. When the silence becomes too much to bear, she begins to hum a chant that she remembers. Not the words, just the melody from her mother cleaning off her scraped knees. And lands much further than here.
Captain Adelaide, by this point, you have been summoned by Mila's familiar. Do we find you still at table with the kobolds, or has business taken you elsewhere?
The dinner with the kobolds very quickly switched from the slow patter of unfamiliar common into the rapid fire sparkings of Draconic. And as usual with Adelaide, whenever he joins their dinners, whenever he joins their conversation, he is fluent in Draconic, but he does speak a lot slower while he listens and learns and every now and then interjects to ask what a word means. Generally, he leaves the kobolds to chatter away about whatever it is, the new supplication for harpoon, their own semi-mystic processes, unfamiliar to someone who is not of a draconic mind. And Adelaide will finish his meal, sit back, enjoy the company for a short bit, and then quietly, without disturbing them, leave and start to do paperwork in his office. Filing both reports for Oxen and Oxen, especially about the repairs that they will have to do on the ship with the grinding of the hull. And various other things that he's been needing to do, as well as getting his paperwork in order. He's looking through his shelving, through his filing, to make sure he has all the proper paperwork up to date for when they officially land in a registered port.
I will say, Adelaide has kept this meticulously in order. You tell me if I'm wrong, Nick. This check feels more like a way of reestablishing stability than actually needing to check if the paperwork is in order.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is a confirmation that everything is where I left it. And just something to occupy his time.
As you receive your summons from Pinky, do you go directly back down into the hold to answer the lieutenant's request, or do you take care of something else before meeting with the rest of your party?
Adelaide will go directly down to the hold where Omar and Mila are.
You see Omar immediately, as soon as you're in the door, turns and says, "Captain, good to see you."
"Good to see you too. I'm pleased that you're alive."
"Where exactly are we headed?"
Adelaide will grab a chair from one of the walls and sit down next to Mila and Omar. Sort of take his hat off, set it on the post of the chair, and just sort of pinch the brow between his eyes and go, "We are going to get you to a hospital. I need to make one step first to make sure there's no heat following us."
"I think that wise. Is there a possibility that at this stop there might be some capacity for healing, which would mean we might not need to enter a major settlement?"
"I think if you left the ship at this particular stop, it would probably do more harm than good."
"Understood."
"Just breathe in the air."
You see he sort of raises an eyebrow and goes, "Understood."
Adelaide's comment about it being injurious to his health, breathing the air, was not a lie, but it wasn't fully truthful either. While there are some risks in breathing the air around an even defunct mining operation, it is not the air that Adelaide is worried about. Adelaide knows this stop and is hoping that Omar is going to be well enough in time to be able to hide himself in one of the cubbies that Adelaide has for emergencies. Just hang tight."
You see that the lieutenant goes, "Understood. I understand that we are now, all of us, on the run."
"See. Seems to me like I'm the only one that started running. You two have been running, either to something or from something."
"That's fair enough. I don't mean to be forward. And I'm unsure of whatever arrangement you've made with my fiancé. If you can, return me and Mila to a place from which I can access it, there is a great amount of money waiting for you on the other side."
Adelaide chuckles and says, "I'm counting on it. But while I do need the cash, I'm not just doing it for the money. I don't like when I can make a difference, an actual difference, in improving people's lives, and I don't take that opportunity."
"We are at the whim of your generosity, Captain. Mila, darling, I am so sorry to ask, but I need to deliver a word to the captain alone."
Mila gives Omar an honestly wounded look that turns quickly into annoyance. leaving him with the understanding that were he in any better state of health, this would not stand. She rubs her hands against one another as she gets up and leaves the hold.
Mila, do you do anything to still hear what is going on in the room as you close the door?
Okay, here's the thing. I don't really know if I am able to do any... Well... No, I'm debating whether to try and have Pinky still be in the room. But if he fails that stealth check, I don't know if I'm going to deal with the consequences of that. Having no way to magically eavesdrop, Mila resorts to taking one round crystal gem from her bag, putting it against the door, and putting her ear onto it.
You know I'm gonna need that stealth check.
Can I roll against it?
Well, wouldn't it be
actually,
his passive?
No. What is your passive perception?
16.
That's a 5, so 6 total.
As the door closes behind Mila, Adelaide, you see the lieutenant's face fully darken. Any sort of charming, affable affect is gone. You, Adelaide, hear a very audible creak that you can almost instantly tell means that Mila is knelt down by the keyhole of the door. The lieutenant appears not to notice. As you see, he looks at you and says, "Captain, if we are to continue, I need from you an assurance."
Of what?
You have seen the form that I took in the forest. I need your assurance that should I take it again, you will be responsible for making sure I hurt not a soul on this vessel, by whatever means at your disposal.
How'd it happen?
He sort of gestures to the tattoos. My best guess is that I was put magically under the influence. Until we have more information, I must treat myself as a potential threat. And I need your assurance, Captain, that should the threat arise, it will be neutralized. I take it you are a man of action.
Now, don't take this the wrong way, but I know many people that have joined the military. I know many folks with a lot of money who have joined the military, looking for man of action or to be man of action. And I find people like that are not people of action, they're people of impulse. I'm not a person of impulse. Now, I can promise you that if you turn again, I'll make sure that everyone on the ship is safe. And that includes yourself.
He looks at you as straight on as he can. What safety is there for a rabid dog?
Soldier, you are not a rabid dog. You are a wounded, her dog, perhaps. But nowhere near Rabbit. I do not take your laugh thinly. I do not take the lives of people under my care thinly. You are on my ship. You follow my protection, my rules. Now, I understand that you are hurting. I understand that you are in a bad place mentally. And so I'll forgive it this one time. I'm telling you right here, right now, if you ever tell me how to run my ship again, you will soon find yourself more than just a hurt, helpless animal. You understand that, son?
Give me an insight check.
What a 22.
You see a man who thought he was out of options. And maybe still does. But who ultimately knows that the people around him, as often is the case, will make better decisions in this moment than he will. Nods, returning to the kind of affect that he had before, goes, "Of course, Captain. Understood."
Glad to hear it.
On behalf of myself and those who care for me.
Don't prostrate yourself. I don't need it. Thanks. Tales from World Asunder is Luisa Zanardi as Mila, Nick Sturman as Adelaide, and Simon Ivchevich as the world falling apart around them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Having trouble sleeping at night? Caught out with a cold? Dry, somatic sleep. The surest way to count sheep on even the lumpiest of mattresses. Now available in extra strength dosage. Please consult your physician if pregnant or partially inhuman to see if somatic sleep is right for you.